I noticed when I chant certain mantras, like to Shiva, it would empty me out, like make me kind of like empty. Krishna kind of fills me up, makes me feel really happy. So that really resonated with me the most.
Mm-hmm. And how do you know Anthony?
I work with him. And actually, we knew each other, but we didn't really introduce ourselves and get to be friends until I started working in the office, and I saw a book on transcendental meditation at his desk, and I decided to pick his brain a little bit, see, you know, if he knew what kirtan was and what bhakti yoga was. And I guess we kind of, you know, introduced each other to some different things. So...
Can you hand me that book that I kept on the counter? Yeah, that would be fine. And I saw a book stand on the...
It's with the set.
Mm-hmm.
Book stand.
Yeah.
So you mentioned bhakti yoga, and kirtan. So I thought I would speak a little about what bhakti yoga actually is. Because the term is used a lot now. And people use it may or may not know what it actually is. So I'm going to read a verse that's originally from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And you have the summary study of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's the nectar of devotion. And every Sanskrit work has one verse that is called the Paribhasa Sutra, which means that it is one verse that governs all the other verses in the work. All the other verses in the work are seen in relation to the Paribhasa Sutra. Now, the Paribhasa Sutra for the Nectar of Devotion or the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu defines bhakti. And as you know from reading the Nectar of Devotion, there are 64 processes of bhakti yoga. Of course, within the 64, five are considered especially potent. But all of them are considered to be pure devotional service if they are performed in the mood of pure devotional service. Otherwise, the same activity performed in a different consciousness would not be called pure devotional service. Jeffrey sort of hit on a point about feeling different from chanting Shiva and the way he feels from chanting Krishna. And why that is so can be understood from the verse. before we read any sacred text, we recite a mantra that is meant to invoke auspiciousness. Of course, we recited all the mantras when we installed the book. So we've already done that. But there's a specific one that we recite when we read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we will do that. You can repeat after me. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
So now we will read this most important verse. Please repeat. Anya.
Anya.
Abhilasita.
Anya. Abhilasita.
Shunyam.
Shunyam.
Jnana.
Jnana.
Karma.
Karma.
Adi.
Adi.
Anavritam.
Anavritam.
Anukulyena.
Anukulyena.
Krishna.
Krishna.
Anushilanam.
Anushilanam.
Bhakti.
Bhakti.
Uttama.
Uttama.
I'll recite one line at a time. It might be hard to follow, but to whatever extent you can, try to repeat. You can, otherwise you can just listen. Anya vilasita shunyam.
Anya vilasita shunyam.
Jnana karma dhyana pritam.
Jnana karma dhyana
pritam. Anukulyena krishnanu.
Anukulyena krishnanu.
Shilanam bhakti uttama.
Shilanam bhakti uttama.
Anya abhilasita shunyam.
Anya abhilasita shunyam.
Without desires.
Without desires.
Other than those.
Other than those.
For the service of Lord Krishna.
For the service of Lord Krishna.
Or without material desires.
Or without material desires.
Such as those for meat eating.
Such as those for meat eating.
Illicit sex.
Illicit sex.
Gambling.
Gambling.
And addiction to intoxicants.
And addiction to intoxicants.
Jnana.
Jnana.
By the knowledge of the philosophy of the most Mayavadis.
By the knowledge of the philosophy of the most Mayavadis.
Now, you must have come across the word Mayavadi. Do you recall coming across the word Mayavadi? Well, monist means someone who, in this context, it means someone who wants to merge and become one with the impersonal light or the void. And Maya bodies are a particular category of monists who believe that everything is Maya. Everything that we can perceive is Maya, including the form of Krishna, the name of Krishna, the service of Krishna, talks about Krishna. It's all Maya. And so this word jnana, which means knowledge, in certain contexts refers to that impersonal concept. And so pure devotional service must not be covered by that type of speculative knowledge. There's the Buddhists are also impersonalists, but their type of impersonalism is a little different. The impersonal, actually, it's quite an interesting topic, because without understanding it, one cannot really practice bhakti properly. So there are actually three categories. There's the Maya bodies, who I just described, and then there's the Brahma bodies. Now, in Srimad Bhagavatam, all the basic principles are presented in all the different books, and there is ultimate harmony among the books. Well, I don't mind if he. And so the statement from one scripture will corroborate the statement of another scripture. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Brahmano hi pratishtaho, that I, Krishna, am the basis of the impersonal Brahma. And Srimad Bhagavatam says that the absolute truth is realized in three features: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So Brahman is the impersonal light. Paramatma is the Lord within the heart. And Bhagavan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So Brahma bodies, they are not like Maya bodies. They accept that the form of Krishna is spiritual, the name of Krishna is spiritual, everything about Krishna is spiritual. So they are not offensive like the Maya bodies. But their preference is to enter into the impersonal light. So they are called Brahma bodies. They're monists, but a different type. And then there are the voidists. They don't have any positive conception of impersonal spirit. Their idea is to sort of dismantle their individual identity and enter the void. I mean, the word nirvana is used in the Bhagavad Gita, meaning cessation of misery. But it doesn't involve, one achieves the state of nirvana by bhakti yoga, you know, not by dismantling one's individual personality. So,
hi.
So bhakti yoga cannot be covered by jnana or karma. And here jnana means specifically any of those impersonal theories. So, there's a footnote here that here jnana does not refer to perfect knowledge in devotional service. One has to learn the path of devotional service with full knowledge from the Vedas. Bhaktya Shuddha Grihitaya. Srimad Bhagavatam 1-12. So, jnana, by the knowledge of the philosophy of the lowest Maya bodies. Karma, by fruitive activities. These are the things that devotional service should not be covered by. Adi means and so on. But here, Srila Prabhupada explains what that adi refers to. By artificially practicing detachment, by the mechanical practice of yoga, by studying the impersonal philosophers, and so on. Anavritam, uncovered, and I'll explain what that means in more detail. Anukuyena, favorable. Krishna Anushilanam, cultivation of service in relationship to Krishna. Bhakti Uttama, first class devotional service. So, translation. When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires. Knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This verse is also found in Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11. As we can understand from Bhagavad Gita 9.34 and 18.65, the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants everyone to think of Him always. Manmana Bhavamat Bhakta. Everyone should become his devotee, not the devotee of a demigod. Everyone should engage in devotional service or archana deity worship in the temple. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Everyone should offer obeisances from moment to moment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are the desires of the Supreme Lord, and one who fulfills his desires favorably is actually a pure devotee. So, this word anukulyena means favorable. Favorable means that we should act for the pleasure of Krishna. And we should know what brings pleasure to Krishna. There's two elements. Our mood should be that we want to please him, and we should also know what actually does please him. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Patra pushpam phalam toyam yome bhakta prayachati. That if one offers me a patra, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water with devotion, bhakti with devotion, I will accept it. And elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, he explains foods in different categories. So, hey, can we turn off the fan?
Yeah.
Sorry. So, we don't offer Krishna meat, fish, or eggs. We don't even offer him onions or garlic, because that's not what he asks for. So, bhakti yoga means that we offer Krishna what he wants. And in the mood of devotion, with the desire to please Krishna. I'll give an example of offering something to Krishna without devotion from the Mahabharata. There was a king named Duryodhana who was actually inimical to Krishna. You've heard of the Battle of Kurukshetra. So Duryodhana was the leader of the other side that was fighting against Arjuna and Pandavas and Krishna. So at one stage, Duryodhana prepared a feast and he invited Krishna. And Krishna said that a person will eat for one of two reasons. One, he's hungry. And two, to accept the love of the person who's offering the food. So Krishna said, I'm not hungry, and you are not preparing the food or offering the food with devotion. So I will not accept your invitation. But instead, Krishna went to the home of a very humble devotee. And that devotee was so overwhelmed with ecstasy when Krishna visited him. And he was so poor, all he had was bananas. But in his ecstasy, he was peeling the bananas and offering Krishna the peels and throwing away the fruit. And Krishna, because of his devotion, Krishna was eating the peels and relishing the peels, because Krishna does not need to eat anything. He's self-satisfied. But he really accepts the devotion with which the offering is made. So we should know what Krishna wants and offer him what he wants in the mood of devotion, in the mood of loving service. So that is bhakti. Anukulina, that means favorable. One's mood should be favorable to Krishna, Duryodhana's mood was not favorable to Krishna. And what we offer him should be favorable in the sense that it is what he wants. Then anushilanam. This is another very important word. Actually, every word is very important here. Anu has two meanings. One is to follow, and the other is continuous. And shilanam means cultivation. So pure devotional service is a continuous cultivation. It's not a part-time engagement. It's not a hobby or a a leisure activity when one has nothing else to do. And anushilanam, we do it following the scriptures, following the authorities, following the previous exemplars. And then Krishna. Now this is a very important word. Krishna, what does Krishna mean? Well, the direct meaning is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The original personality of Godhead. The first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam lists 26 different incarnations, and at the end of the list, the Bhagavatam says, Ete chamsa kalapumsam, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. That all of the incarnations in the list are plenary portions or portions of plenary portions of Krishna. But Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of God. And the Brahma Samhita gives the example of a candle, that from one candle you can light a second, from the second you can light a third, from the third you can light a fourth. And they all may have the same candle power, but still there's one original candle. So that's Krishna. And Ramadi Munti Shukalanya Mainatishnam, he expands himself into different incarnations or forms, such as Rama, Nishinga, and so on. And all of those direct expansions of Krishna are called Vishnu Tattva. They're in the same category of Krishna. And our acharyas have explained that in this verse, Krishna means Krishna, but also it includes his plenary portions, such as Rama, Nrisimha, of Vishnu, and so on. It does not, however, include demigods. And this understanding is essential for the performance of bhakti yoga. There is another category of powerful being who are not in the Vishnu category, who are within the material world, but they are very powerful. And personalities in that category include Shiva, Durga, Ganesh. There are many in that category. And they are compared to ministers in the government of a king. The ministers have no independent authority. If the king wants, he can dismiss them. But because of their ability and their loyalty to the king, they're given the posts of ministers. And so these demigods or devatas are like ministers to the king, to Krishna. And they're in charge of different departments. Brahma is in charge of creation, Shiva is in charge of destruction, and Saraswati is in charge of learning and music and culture, like that. And then some of them are in charge of planets. Yeah, like Surya is in charge of the sun, Chandra is in charge of the moon, Indra is, he has both. He's in charge of rainfall, but he's also the presiding deity of Svargaloka, which is like paradise, you could say. It's in the material world, it's a heavenly planet. So these demigods are not independent. They're not equal to Krishna, and they're not independent of Krishna. And one of the, you probably have read this in the Nectar of Devotion about the 10 offenses in the chanting of the Holy Name. Jeffrey, what books have you read? Have you read any of the books?
No, I haven't. I've read the Bhagavad Gita a little bit, but that's about it.
Okay. So you're more for kirtan.
Yeah, well, I've read like the Ramayana and the Vedanta.
Okay, well, you're getting a good introduction here.
Yeah.
Getting a good introduction here. So, among the 64 items of Bhakti Yoga, there are 9 that are considered important. And then the first 3 of those 9 are Shravanam, which means hearing, Kirtanam, which is chanting, and Smaranam, which is remembering. So within Kirtan, there are instructions how to perform Kirtan. And there are 10 offenses that one should avoid while chanting. And one of the 10 offenses is to consider the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu or Krishna. So one can chant the names of demigods, like you said, the name of Lord Shiva or any of the demigods. But if we think that they are equal to or independent of Krishna, then that is an offense, and it will not, it won't, you know, increase our devotion, but it will actually shrink it. So we have to be aware of that. Now, this is like we're discussing what is Krishna, and so along with that, we're discussing what is not included in Krishna in this definition. So Krishna includes his direct expansions in the Vishnu category, like Rama, Nrisimha, Varaha, Narayan, Vishnu, and so on. It does not include demigods. But it does include, because Krishna is absolute, so it includes his name. In other words, service to Krishna includes service to his name, to his form, to his qualities, to his pastimes, to his paraphernalia, and to his pure devotees. They're all contained within the category of Krishna. And Rupa Goswami says that any of the items of devotional service in relation to Krishna can be performed in relation to any of these categories. Now, Krishna is never alone. This is a very basic point. Krishna is never alone. For example, the commentaries use the example of a king. But coming here, I saw a big, I don't know, it was a sticker or something about Obama. But so we'll use Obama because he's more in our context here. So if I were to say President Obama is coming, it doesn't mean that he would be, you know, coming alone. When we say President Obama is coming, it is understood that he's coming with his secretaries, his bodyguards, his whole entourage. So we say President Obama's coming, but it doesn't mean just President Obama. It means like, you know, the Air Force One and the presidential limousine and all of his entourage and paraphernalia. Those are included when we say President Obama's coming. So in the same way, when we say Krishna, it means Krishna and his associates, his paraphernalia, everything that comes with Krishna. And we serve all of them. And that is included in bhakti. Now, this first compound word, anya abhilasita sunyam. So anya means other. Abhilas means desires, and sunyam means devoid of. One should have, okay, we already said that bhakti means that one should desire to please Krishna. But the other side is that one should have no other desire. But this word, abhilas, which means desire, has a suffix, ita. And what does that ita mean? It means that in one's normal disposition, one does not engage in devotional service for any material benefit. That is against pure devotional service. And that's why I said the consciousness is the critical factor in devotional service. You know, someone could put, say, offer a dollar in the donation box to Krishna with the idea of pleasing Krishna. But one could offer a dollar in the donation box with the idea that I'll get $10 back. In other words, much of religion is motivated with the desire for some material benefit. You know, people go to the church and pray, "Dear God, give us this day our daily bread." They want something from God. But in pure devotional service, we're not asking anything from God. We want only to serve Him, and we have no other desire. But that suffix "ita" means that in an extreme situation of danger, for example, one might pray to Krishna for protection. Just like if someone is coming to kill you, or you know, someone is like mortally wounded. So you might spontaneously pray to Krishna. That is not considered a deviation from the principles of pure devotional service, because you are not engaging in devotional service to get material protection for yourself or your family. But in some extreme circumstance, without any other recourse, for a moment, one may do that, and that is not considered against the principle of pure devotional service. And therefore, that suffix "ita," it means, like, generally, you know, one does not have any other desire except to serve Krishna. I think those are the shilanam. Shilanam, cultivation. Now that cultivation can be done with the senses and with the mind. And in the liberated state, one even engages in service, a sort of spiritual service that's beyond even the mind. It's a sort of internal meditation in the liberated state in which one serves Krishna. And those are all included in Shivana. And it's not, you know, it's a cultivation. It's not an activity. So this is the basic definition of bhakti. And, you know, the term is used so loosely now. It's, you know, people talk about bhakti towards, well, demigods, that's one. Bhakti towards their parents. Bhakti towards their country. You know, they use it in ways that really are not appropriate for bhakti. So this is what it is. And so now I will finish reading the purport. I don't think I'll need to comment much on the purport, and then we can see about questions. Okay, so, yes, Srila Prabhupada began in the purport by quoting these two verses from the Bhagavad Gita that both have the same lines, and it's really the essence of bhakti in the Bhagavad Gita. Manmana, always think of Krishna. Madbhakta, become a devotee of Krishna. Madhyaji, worship Krishna, and Mam Namaskaru offer obeisances to Krishna. Then these are the desires of the Supreme Lord. And one who fulfills his desires favorably is actually a pure devotee. Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto him, and devotional service means preaching this gospel all over the world. The Lord says openly in the Bhagavad Gita 18:69, Na chitasman manusyeshu kaschan me priya kritama. One should preach the gospel of the Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of all. The Bhagavad Gita is spoken by the Lord so that human society can be perfectly organized from all angles of vision, politically, socially, economically, philosophically, and religiously. From any point of view, human society can be reformed by the Krishna consciousness movement. Therefore, one who spreads this philosophy of Krishna consciousness for the benefit of all conditioned souls in the universe is perfect in pure devotional service. So this is sort of the postgraduate phase of devotional service in relation to the Bhagavad Gita. Because after everything, after Manana Bhava Mad Bhakto, engage your mind in thinking of Krishna and become his devotee, and Sarvadharman Parityaja Mamekam Saranam Vraja, give up all varieties of religiosity and just surrender to Krishna. After that, he says that one who preaches this message is my dear most servant, and in the end he will come to me. So, and that pleases Krishna. We're talking about pleasing Krishna. That really pleases Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada gives the example that comparing the benefit one gives someone from Krishna consciousness as opposed to from other measures, material measures. Give the example that suppose the son of a rich man for some reason runs away from home and he's living on the street in poverty. So a friend who knows him, yeah, he can give him some bread or some money which will be used up, you know, in a few hours. Or he can say, oh, I know you. You're the son of so-and-so. What happened? Why don't you go back home to your father? So if he brings it back to his father, then all of his problems are solved, and the father is very pleased. So that's why distributing Krishna consciousness is doing the best for the people who receive it, and it's also the most pleasing to Krishna. And bhakti means to please Krishna. So let's quickly finish this. The criterion is that a devotee must know what Krishna wants him to do. This can be achieved through the medium of the spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami advises, Ado Gurvashraya. So yes, in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, there are 64 items, but there's 10 preliminary items. And the first is Guru Padashraya, to take shelter of the spiritual master. Dikshayati Shikshayati to learn from him, to take initiation from him, and to inquire of him. These are like the preliminary items. So it's through the medium of the spiritual master that one knows what Krishna wants. The bhakti means that we want to please Krishna by doing what he wants. One who is serious in wanting to render pure devotional service to the Lord must take shelter of the spiritual master who comes in the disciplic succession from Krishna. Evam parampara praptam imam adarshaya vidu. Without accepting a bona fide spiritual master coming in the disciplic succession, one cannot find out the real purpose of devotional service. Therefore, one has to accept the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and agree to be directed by him. The first business of a pure devotee is to satisfy his spiritual master, whose only business is to spread Krishna consciousness. Yasya prasada, bhagavat prasada. If one can satisfy the spiritual master, Krishna is automatically satisfied. This is the success of devotional service. This is the meaning of the word anukulyena. That is favorable devotional service to the Lord. A pure devotee has no plans other than those for the Lord's service. He is not interested in attaining success in mundane activities. He simply wants success in the progress of devotional service. For a devotee, there cannot be worship of others or demigod worship. A pure devotee does not engage himself in such pseudo-devotional service. He is interested only in satisfying Krishna. If one lives only for the satisfaction of Krishna, he does not have to accept this order or that order. One's only business should be to satisfy Krishna. This process is completely manifest in the activities of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. It has been actually proved that the entire world can accept devotional service without failure. One simply has to follow the instructions of the representative of Krishna. So it's very clear that without studying all the books. I mean, we should actually study all the books, but even if someone comes and just understands that Srila Prabhupada is Krishna's representative and the Krishna Consciousness Movement has been implemented to please Krishna. So just by following Srila Prabhupada and associating with and rendering service to the Krishna Consciousness Movement, one is pleasing Krishna, and one is engaged in pure devotional service. So, I could say more, but I think I would like to hear from you, what your thoughts are, or if you have any questions.
Where did you read from? You're reading from the Act of Devotion of Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Just this, yeah. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 19, The Lord Instructs Rupa Goswami, Text 167.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Yes?
Earlier you were talking about, I think it was Damodar, is that right? The name?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you said he was immovable to Krishna.
Duryodhana.
Duryodhana, okay.
Duryodhana, yes.
What is, I don't understand what that means, inimical. Is that comparable?
No. Inimical means in the mood of an enemy.
Oh.
Yeah, he was in the mood of an enemy.
You read and also spoke about how the preacher is dear to Krishna. Is there any specific type of preaching that's more dear to Krishna than another, like book distribution, kirtan? Is there anyone that's more?
You know, every devotee has his own part to play. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says it's better to perform your own duty imperfectly than someone else's duty perfectly. So, yeah, we could say book distribution, but then Srila Prabhupada said that better than distributing books is managing the book distribution. So, yeah, I don't think that's, you know, we should do what we can do. Of course, book distribution is the foundation. Books are the basis. Now, seeing this, Buddha, I was reminded of my own mantle place before I met Srila Prabhupada. And Buddha is actually included in the list of incarnations. But Buddha himself did not teach theism. I mean, he's considered to be atheistic. But he did have a role. I mean, Krishna came as Buddha for a reason. And the reason is that people were killing animals and eating their flesh. And Buddha, out of compassion for the animals, wanted to stop them. And also out of compassion for the people, because they were suffering all the reactions for killing the animals. And that giving up of eating meat is sort of necessary to make progress spiritually. But it was part of a three-part strategy. So Buddha came and he said, you know, stop killing animals and eating meat. But the people said, well, it's in the Vedas that you can sacrifice animals. I mean, it's not really the way they were saying, but they were misusing the Vedas to support their killing animals and eating flesh. So Buddha said, well, you know, if that's what the Vedas said, don't follow the Vedas. You know, follow me. And then, he spoke about nirvana and the void. But he also said that it's very hard to focus on the void. So in the beginning, you can, like, worship me. And in that way, he was tricking them because he was actually an incarnation of Krishna, so he's tricking them into worshiping Krishna. Then, the next part in this strategy was Shankaracharya. Have you heard of Shankaracharya? Jeffrey, have you heard of Shankaracharya?
I've heard the name before, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what he did is not of much relevance to us, but what he did was, because the Buddhists were basically atheists and they rejected the Vedas. So he said, that's all right, you can remain atheist and still, but you should follow the Vedas. And so he gave this sort of atheistic interpretation of the Vedas, which is what we referred to earlier as the philosophy of the Mayavadis. And then the last part in the strategy was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he defeated the false interpretation of the Vedas in an impersonal way and established the correct understanding, which is, you know, Krishna's two Bhagavans, right? Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaneti Shabdite. That non-dual absolute truth is realized in three features: impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. And so that's where we are now. You know, it's said that that Lord Buddha, you could say, cleared the ground. And Shankaracharya built the temple, but it was empty. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu installed the deity of Krishna in the temple. Mm-hmm. So, all part of a process that led to this conclusion. Yes?
I was going to ask, are there any other meanings for Krishna other than his God?
Yes, that's a very good question. Krishna refers to God, but it also has a literal meaning, which is all attractive. Because whatever qualities God has, they're attractive. Whatever activities he has, they're attractive. Anything that you can say about God is attractive. So any word that refers to God's form or qualities or activities or relationships with his devotees can be taken as a name of God. So Krishna has unlimited qualities, has unlimited activities, so he has unlimited names. But whatever those qualities or activities are, they're attractive. And therefore the name Krishna is considered the best name for God, because that quality of being attractive applies to all of his other qualities. Like one name of Krishna is Dinabandhu, like he's the friend of the distressed. So you think, oh, he's the friend of the distressed, so that you're attracted. So any name, there's hundreds and millions of names of Krishna, but they're all attractive. They're all meant to attract us to Krishna, because Krishna is all attractive. And so the name Krishna is considered the primary name of Krishna because it includes all the other names. That was a good question.
She's reading a Krishna book.
Hmm. Certainly not an ordinary child.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yes.
All right, I think we can move along then. So what's next?
We still push up.
Yeah.
And the
offer? Or?
Yeah, have you offered? You can do the offering now.
Okay.
So should we have kirtan for a few minutes?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Oh, my cartoons are there. What's your name?
Navi.
Navi? How do you spell it?
N-A-V-I.
Does it have a meaning? Does it have a meaning?
Have you ever heard of the Legend of Zelda?
The Legend of Zelda?
Yeah.
I don't think I have. So is Navi a character in the Legend of Zelda?
It's a fairy.
Oh, a fairy. Okay.
Yeah.
How would you like a spiritual name?
I would like one.
Yeah. Well, I thought of a good one. It's a little longer, but it's very beautiful. It means like an angel, you know, like a fairy, like an angel. But it can also refer to Radharani. You know who Radha is?
Radha?
Yeah.
Something.
Well, you see the picture of Krishna on the wall?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lady next to Krishna. That's Radha.
Oh.
And when we chant Hare Krishna, the Hare refers to Radha. So this name, it can refer to like angels or fairies and to Radharani. That name is Gandharvika.
Wow.
And it even has the V from Navi in it.
Yeah. Maharaj, does it mean like also an angel who can sing beautifully?
Yeah.
Like a dark?
That's true. That's another reason why it's very appropriate. Gandharvas, they're known for singing beautifully.
Can you say it?
Hmm?
Can you say it?
What?
Name.
You might need to practice because it's a long name.
Yeah.
You write
it down for you? Yeah. Did you ever ask Maya what her name means?
Mm-mm. I don't know if she knows.
Yeah.
We told the story a long time ago, Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. It was like maybe a year ago in the temple.
G-A-N. Dharvika.
Hare Krishna.
Now you'll really sing like an angel. You already do. Well, why don't I saw the little 3-minute video you that was pretty good. Maybe if for a few minutes you all should sing.
Nice.
Can we recreate that?